is Davin's Den.
All right, everybody. Thank you for hanging out on Davin's Den. Let's get right into it with some School of Fools. Sometimes it's teachers behaving badly. Sometimes it's the principals.
Ring around the rosy, bucket full of posies. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down.
Shame, shame, shame.
School of Fools.
A South Bronx elementary principal who publicly posted student test scores in the school lobby to shame low achievers into improving was unprofessional and arguably cruel, an investigation found. Victoria Nahida, principal of PS333, the Longwood Academy of Discovery, also held an assembly to announce a trip to Cirque du Soleil for the highest scoring kids, calling each winner by name. You are not a loser. Struggling students excluded from the trip were crushed. One boy sobbed so hard he gasped for breath, and a girl scrawled on paper that she wanted to kill herself, teachers recalled. Really? For acrobats? Okay. Beyond cruel, Nahara's actions may also have violated the chancellor's regulations as well as other state federal safeguards against releasing students' records. The special commissioner of investigation for city schools concluded in a January 18th report to Chancellor David Banks and released to the Post. Special Commissioner Anastasia Coleman recommended that the Department of Education take appropriate action with Nahara, who is still the school's principal. Nahara explained to investigators that during the 2019-2020 school year, she started goal setting for all students and displaying their progression throughout the year, the SCI reports. Nahara said she intended to motivate and give students incentives to improve. A staffer told SCI that Nahara believes students need to be embarrassed to do better. Last year, only 4% of PS333 students taking the state math test passed, and 10% passed the state reading test. So clearly she's having a positive effect. A change.org petition titled Save Our District 8 Public School has garnered 242 signatures so far. Nahara uses intimidation and bullying to instill fear and create a hostile work environment for children, parents, and teachers. Letitia Thompson, last year's PTA president and now Title I chair, has filed multiple other complaints against Nahara, alleging discriminatory hiring and misuse of funds, with District 8 Superintendent Jennifer Joint and Banks Deputy Chancellor for Leadership Desmond Blackburn. Obviously, she wasn't disciplined because nothing's changed. It's actually getting worse, Thompson said. They are allowing a principal to create and foster a traumatic, toxic, and chaotic environment for our children. The SCI said it referred four complaints to Department of Education's Office of Special Investigations. The Department of Education refused to comment. I don't think this is the best way to motivate the students. She would have been better served. She would have been better served listed the top X amount of scores for achieving so well are going to be eligible to go to a trip to Cirque du Soleil. That's motivation. Because if a kid wants to go to that, to go, all right, I really need to hunker down. You don't do it after the fact. And you certainly don't post it in a lobby. And I'm trying to think, like, I think when you're in college, sometimes they do that. Like, professors will leave the scores outside, like, their office door, which is fine. It's not elementary school where, like, these kids are subjected to bullying. This is not the best way to get things done, and clearly she's not getting positive results.
You don't motivate students with embarrassment. All you do is I know there's a lot of talk about self-esteem, and you know, kids get a medal just for showing up. But no, here is where we're talking about not every student is an A student. Not every student has the capacity to be an A student. Now, if they were really truly setting levels of achievement by the student, and say they were saying, if this is your goal, and, you know, for this semester we want you to work towards this. If you have a D student and you want them to work their way into the C's, And that is an achievement for that student. And if you want to reward them for working hard on their own level, then you could say, okay, everybody who meets these markers on their own achievement success scale, they can go on the trip to, you know, because they've worked hard. Not just these are the kids who got the highest scores and they're the only ones that get anything. For little kids, that could be crushing. It's not motivating.
Well, let me ask,
not properly.
Let me ask you a question, because I read this last week, and then I read it today, or not today, I read it yesterday. I was doing prep yesterday. And I'm looking at it now. So the crux of this is that she announced that the people with the highest score was going to Circus Olay. She didn't mention this beforehand.
It would seem she didn't mention it beforehand, and I think the real problem was that she posted the low-scoring kids in the lobby. I think that was like the bigger issue than Circus Olay. Like, if she hadn't done that, I don't think there'd be so much shit about the Circus Olay thing.
Right, but Adab, I'm not being combative. I didn't hear it the first time. She did not mention it beforehand, right?
It didn't say explicitly in the article, but I'm guessing not. From the way, you know, the New York Post always writes amazing articles. The way it was written, it did not say that they were told ahead of time. Because then that could be argued it was used as motivation.
Yeah, I got two schools of thought on this. If it was announced beforehand, you know, everything in life is going to be an incentive to get it, you know, an incentive to get ahead, you know, ahead where there is a goal, whether it's a better job or it's a house. So you strive to get for that and to get to that, and if you fall short, you learn from that and you get back at it the next time. If you post your grades or the posted grades, same thing as like you're going for an audition or whatever, where they hang the auditions there. That's a life thing.
Now, but here's the thing: these are elementary school kids.
Hey, you want to know something? You know, if the way things are now, if somebody wants to be a boy or a girl or change this or do that. They're exposing it. They're exposing all these kids to stuff in adult life right off the bat. You know, this should be no different.
No, it is different. It's absolutely different. I mean, because you have these parents saying our kids were traumatized by the administration. That's how it's different. The administration is doing this. Isn't like there's bullies. The kids are being bullied by other bullies. They're saying the principal of the school is causing trauma to the children, and it needn't be that way. You know, so it's complete. There's a better workaround. She's being a CUNT. That's what she's being.
I feel that you know, you need to be at a certain level. You're always going to need to be at a certain level.
As an 8-year-old?
Yeah. That's when you start learning.
Now, yeah, not like this though.
It would be different. Now, listen to me. This is all under the guise of she mentioning it before this went on. Now, if it's the way this well-written story says, that she came out and said, well, the highest students are going to Circus Olay, and she posted this, and these kids did not have an idea that this was going to be a reward for this, then she's wrong. She's absolutely wrong. So if we go with the story with this, then I'm on board with you guys that she's absolutely wrong and that she, you know, she had the incentive. But you shortchange these kids. You know, this has gone on. When I was in high school, I wanted to be on the football team. I joined the football team, and majority of the kids went to camp. My mom didn't have money for camp. Me and a couple of other guys that were varsity previous years couldn't go to camp. Everybody comes back to camp. And we all knew the place, and we didn't, because we didn't go to camp. We didn't have the money. And it's the only thing in my life I ever quit. And you know how tough comedy is, but I never quit that. I don't quit. It was pointless. I mean, you know, maybe I didn't want it that bad. You know, maybe
yeah, but what these parents are saying is, you're making our kids traumatized where they hate school, and it's not working. They said what the test scores have been. This principal, I mean, listen, there's all sorts of reasons why test scores are poor, And we don't have to go into them now. But this isn't, this principal is not a beacon of success. It's not like they said, well, under her, despite this, under her leadership, test scores have continuously been on the rise. Then you go, okay, maybe we have something here. Maybe there's a further discussion. No, she's an utter failure. She is failing and she's traumatizing children. Why is she still in this position? I don't understand. I mean, to quote Joe, she needs to learn a life lesson. She is not doing the job, so she has failed. We need to place somebody in there who has done positive things. She needs to go.
So the crux of the story is that due to the way it was written, I'm on board with you. If it was not mentioned, it was a little bit of a debate if it was mentioned. Now that being said. Moving on, I read the Post Sunday, and I read the Post. Every week, they have a situation at a school that goes on all the time in the school. Now, I think that it's the chancellor's job and the policy and the culture in these schools with subpar teachers. They're not keeping the grades up. There's an agenda. Moving on, and they take, you know, and somebody's not riding herd. So I would take this story and the other stories that I read every Sunday and the situation of the public school, and somebody's really got to take hand.
Well, I think there's also social school. There's also social aspects. A lot of these parents are not home because they're working X amount of jobs and the kids come home and they need extra help. I mean, I know my daughter needed extra help when she was in elementary school and there's nobody there to help them. So that's part of it too. And you know what? I don't know the resources these schools have. I know a lot of teachers have to get things for the classroom out of their own pocket. So I don't know the situation. Yes,
that goes in, right. So that goes into the whole, you know, thing of
right. So I don't want to slam the teachers, I don't want to slam the parents, I don't want to slam the kids. I'm just focusing on this principal who has set this standard, is not seeing positive results from it, and is getting pushback that you're traumatizing elementary school kids, kindergartners, first graders, second. Like, this would be different if this was high school. We could have it would be a different conversation. I don't know if I would change my opinion or not, but it would certainly be a different conversation. These are elementary school kids. Everything is so formative now. If you turn these kids off and make them hate school, they may never come back to it, and you may send these kids on a horrible path. This is when you really need quality educators to get these kids a love for reading, for math, for learning. And this is not, the parents are saying, this is not doing it. So she's from what's written, it would seem she is a failure and some action must be taken. I mean, we've seen teachers get fired for shooting porn, which is not great. This seems worse than shooting porn. This seems like it has more of a direct effect on the children.
Now, going back to what I was saying is with the situation with the New York City school system. Let's say that they do take discipline.
Joe's a product of the New York public school system.
I'm going to take all night till I get the word right. It's been a long day, folks. Disciplinary.
We're going to take a musical break. We'll be back in 10 minutes for Joe to work it out.
Only took a damn hour. Disciplinary. Oh, you heard what I said. The first
disciplinary actions.
Thank you, pal.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. But anyway, all right, so if you take that, what happens is it goes before the union. The union says, well, we need to have a hearing. You know, we have to have a hearing. And what happens is they go to a rubber room where they show up and they sit around and get paid for months until the case gets called, till they figure it out, till there's arbitration. And that's costing a lot of money. That's one aspect of the city school system that needs to be ironed out. And a lot of things, when you speak about the minority communities, the minority communities suffer with this, where they're not getting the education. The politicians dance around it because the school union puts a lot of money into their pocket. And meanwhile, you've got a lot of kids that aren't getting the education that they deserve. So whether we differ on how we feel about this story goes into a pool of other instances with principals, teachers, policy, that are not being addressed the way it should be by the school system, and it somebody really needs to take a look at it. But what happens is they're in the pocket of the union, and no politician's going to do anything about it.
I'll tell you what, Joe. The arguments you are making, I'm much more interested in those type of arguments than the fecocked social issues that are being waged at meetings, it seems, all over the place. Because what you're talking about affects a lot more kids and really needs to be figured out as opposed to people.
I'm thinking about, we're not going to get any arguments, but I think a lot of the social issues, too, goes.
It's not the same, man. You're talking about educating hundreds and thousands of children. These social issues affect maybe a very, very small handful, and a lot of it, and we've talked about, there's these political groups that are using it to grandstand and make, hey, I'm much more interested in the argument that you made beforehand about what can be done. And it's not just money, because we throw money at it. There's a lot going on, and we're not the ones to solve it.
But I know some teachers that feel that they get, especially city teachers, that feel like getting this agenda shoved down their throat to push. You know, and so that's got to go, regardless of you agree, I agree, she agrees.
Listen, if we get all the kids properly educated, if we get all the kids properly educated where they're doing how they should be in math and reading, then we could talk about, do we need a third restroom? I'm just saying there's bigger fish to fry, and your argument speaks to the bigger fish to fry, but we don't want to. We don't want to do that. It's
important, but this is too, especially with test scores and the teachers pushing kids ahead when they don't have the scores, and they're glossing over their reading skills, so the school looks good. It's a big disservice. Now, with all that, yeah, I would push that ahead, because if they're really taking a stand on something, then you know maybe the social issues will come and you debate that. But basically, the school system in New York. Shot.
Well, it's like I always say with many of these things, a lot. But it's like I say with like these politicians when they go to these things, whether it be a president or a governor or whatever. It's like, all right, so I guess we've solved every other problem. We can worry about this minutia stuff, and we talk about the minutia stuff because it's an interesting art. It's an interesting for radio and for talk, I think. But what you put your excuse me, what you put your finger on is much more pressing. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to something much more pressing. Porn in Louisiana. Let's get down to brass tacks. Anyone trying to access online pornography in Louisiana must prove their age using a government ID, thanks to a new state law that went into effect at the beginning of the year. The statute really? The statute requires any website... Oh, this is my blog, by the way, so I'll be pontificating. Any website that contains a substantial portion of its content defined as harmful to minors, like this show, to verify that potential users are over age 18 or risk being held legally liable. Reporters from the tech news site Motherboard, who attempted to access the popular site Pornhub using a Louisiana-based IP address, were met with a page asking them to submit age verification, which also directed them to a service that could access the state's digital driver's license system. But what happens if you're just a tourist in, like, New Orleans? I don't know. Anyway. I want to look at porn. I've seen tits on the street, on Bourbon Street. Now I need to finish. Anyway, pornography is destroying our children, and they're getting unlimited access to it on the internet. So if the pornography companies aren't going to be responsible, I thought we need to go ahead and hold them accountable. The law's author, State Representative Lori Schlegel, told a location news station. Concerns about the effects of pornography have on children have persisted as long as porn itself has existed. Those fears have become especially pronounced because of the easy access and sheer volume of explicit content that the internet provides, though there's debate over just how damaging pornography is to developing minds. Over the past few years, most of the focus has been on keeping content featuring the sexual exploitation of minors from being shared online. A push that successfully compelled sites like Pornhub to remove all content posted by unverified profiles. Louisiana isn't alone in looking to extend these requirements to users as well. Governments in France, the United Kingdom, Germany, Canada, and Australia have all considered mandating some form of age verification for online porn consumers. Last month, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah introduced a bill that would impose nationwide rules similar to Louisiana's law. Listen, keep your fucking Mormon hands off our porn.
You keep your hands to yourself, we'll keep our hands on ourselves, all right?
Yes. That should be a slogan. Advocates for age verification laws say they're necessary to put a barrier between kids and the flood of explicit content that can easily be accessed online, which they argue can have profound negative impacts on children's development. Some add that it's perfectly reasonable to ask adult consumers to make a small extra effort to access porn if it means underage users can't. Some conservative Christians, many of whom believe pornography should be banned full stop, are in favor of anything that makes it more difficult for any group to view porn. That way they can engage in their extracurricular activities in motel rooms where God wants it. Critics on age verification have two main complaints. Hey, I can't get on. And now I can't get off. The first is about practicality. They argue that it is simply too easy for even minimally tech-savvy users to get around age check barriers, meaning the laws won't actually prevent children from seeing porn if they want to, but will prevent grandpa. There's also concern that the extra
I gotta stop you. That's very funny.
Thank you. We're just gonna have angry seniors who have their pants down and they can't pull them up and they can't get on to see porn. What are you doing, you monsters of Louisiana?
Career, I can't jerk off to an Asian broad. I don't understand.
And my, Jay, we could jerk off to any type of broad we wanted, and we didn't need verification. I just, my grandson just saved it in my favorites, and off I went. And then off I went.
You don't remember what it was like when a kid, where you had to use, you watch scramble porn, or you had to hope the porn fairy left a Playboy in the woods.
The porn.
You had to go back to the video store, going through those double doors like you're in some Western. I need to jerk off. Where's your porn? You know what I mean? It's spoiled now.
The noisiest doors in America were in the porn section. Like seriously, I'll pay an extra quarter for my failure to rewind if somebody would buy them some oil to do the hinges. I mean, yeah, listen, I got lubricant. Let me do it.
You walk through those doors, there's moose in Canada that are hearing it going, oh, he's in there again, all right.
What a filthy concept that was, renting porn. You're handling something that everybody else has handled after they handled themselves. What a what a bunch of pigs we were.
You know what? If they ever had one of those black lights in that room, everybody would run screaming.
Oh, it would look like a fucking planetarium. It looked like my background.
and here's the worst part. Here's the worst. Let's be honest. Most people don't rewind. So you get one. You find out right where they got off. Right where the last person was.
Yep.
Wow. A conversation about a failed marriage. I didn't see them getting off to that. But here we are. That's where they stopped.
So my pants are falling, and I can't get off.
There's also concern that the extra obstacle might push porn consumers toward darker corners of the internet, that unlike mainstream porn sites, don't include any controls to root out non-consensual exploitive content. Where are these corners? I need to investigate. The second criticism centers around privacy, or as the British say, privacy. Though Louisiana's law bars any verification service from retaining personal data, online rights groups say there's no way to ensure that critical information like driver's license numbers or other identifiable data can be kept safe. You know why I pulled you over? Because you were jerking off back there at home. I just pulled up on the screen.
Yeah.
License, can you imagine?
License and registration. Just hold it up. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
Would you like my license? No, I know what you did, you filthy animal.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine that, if identity theft is when, hackers break into a database of credit cards and everything, what if they broke into the database of all these people who had signed up for porn? The blackmail opportunities.
Exactly. There are also concerns about the risk of someone's personal info being tied directly to the porn they consume, then made public, a prospect that could be particularly dangerous for LGBTQ people. Yeah, you're going to have all these poor married straight guys that are being called, gay because they like seeing lesbians. It's a problem.
No.
Now, that's the problem, Pip. That's the problem. The fate of Louisiana's new law and other potential statutes that may mimic it could end up in the hands of the courts. Oh, not their hands.
Oh, filthiest ones.
In the Supreme Court, in the past, the Supreme Court has rejected on free speech grounds several efforts to limit pornography access, but it remains to be seen whether a substantive legal challenge will be filed in this case. All right. Like, I will concede the fact that porn is readily available, and it's probably corrupt. It probably hurts kids. Probably hurts a lot of people because it gives unrealistic expectations of what bodies should look like, of what relationships should look like. I mean, every guy thinks as soon as he walks in the door, he should get a blowjob. No, no. 20 minutes. Then you get the
pizza.
What?
Especially if you deliver
pizza. Sure. But it just seems, and Pip touched on it. Huddle. yeah, like the cyber concerns, the safety concerns are just too real. There's too many hacks. They can't keep it safe. There's going to be blackmail issues. I don't know. It seems like government overreach. And let's be honest, the kids know how to get around it. They know how to use a VPN. They know how to go on sites that don't have these things. And I don't know what they want the porn sites to do. From what I'm told, you must verify that you're 18 or over by a click. I don't know this for a fact, but I've been told that.
Yeah, I heard tell of that as well. And oh, you're 18, you click it, and you go, and somebody was telling me that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and who
was... Yeah, somebody told you that. And it was me, because I have to watch more damn porn to do one of our games.
It's been a while.
I have to say I was over 18 a lot.
That's right. Pip told us that. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Pip was our source.
I told them they had not seen it. You're welcome. They had not seen it before themselves. But when I watched all that porn to produce the show, the games for the show, I noticed this.
And I think they're casting aspersions on the children because the websites are there and it says 18 or over. Like a kid's going to lie on Pornhub. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Of course not. Of course not. Because, you know, that kind of filter, that keeps all the kids, that scares them into submission.
The reality is teenagers know how to get access to this stuff. I feel like this is the Christian right doing what the Christian right likes to do and, you know, and ruin everybody's good time.
Well, you know what? Making it something that, you know, trying to put all kinds of limits on it, I don't think that that's the right way to go. I think that, you know, not like parents don't have enough to do, but I mean, really, I think that a lot of parents do not take seriously the many, many warnings they've gotten to watch what your kids are doing online. Watch what they're doing on their phone. Keep the computer in the family room.
All right. Stop at 1996 Commodore 64. The family computer is not in the family room. The family computer is on all their phones.
Watch what they're doing.
But you're being unrealistic. I agree with you, and I wrote this in my blog. It is up to the parents. We have to have these conversations about the harms of porn, all that goes with it. But like, oh, the family computer. Let me pull up to the desktop in 1964 before mom and dad come home from buying the groceries. I hope they were able to get all the recyclable cash so we could pay our interweb bill.
Especially like I said, if I you know, got remarried and I had a son or whatever, I would go, all right, son, you know, Sue is going to be here alone. You know, not what you've seen on in the videos. As soon as I leave, mom's not going to fuck you. So I just want to let you know that, you know, it's a reality.
What?
I think Joe's talking about stepmother porn. But the thing is, it's not. It's incest. Joe created incest porn, is what Joe
did. He did.
No, but you not in your scenario.
Not in your scenario. That was
scenario.
Well, in your scenario, you've remarried. So, and since you don't have a son, this is her son. And you said, as soon as I leave, mom's not going to fuck you. No, you created incest porn.
All right, we do a rewrite. Jesus Christ, we rewrote my project 3 fucking times. We can't rewrite this.
We just did. Listen.
Yeah, it's called Oedipus Curry.
Oedipus Curry. I gotta tell you, not a fan of Oedipus Curry. I had it at the Indian restaurant. A lot of heartburn with the Oedipus Curry.
It made me really sick.
Yeah, it really did. But Joe seems to be a fan. So
yeah. They're gonna, you know, it's really weird. Yeah, I guess the parents have to shut step in. But, you know, the other way around, they're going to find a way around it. Look, there was one time that Anthony's uncle had some video, and this is going way back, some 8mm videos and stuff like that.
Wow.
We got to figure something out. So what we did was we called John Glenn High School, and we said, hey, look, we want to borrow one of the film projectors, you know, because we're taxpayers and stuff like that. And they let us borrow it. So we got the film projector, and we brought it back to the house, and we were watching, you know, 8mm porn with John Glenn's video projector. So if you want to see porn, you're going to see porn, you know? So there's really no stopping it.
It's quite the workaround.
Yeah.
Or reach around.
Yes.
We're on the phone with the high school. We're taxpayers. We want to get a video.
Joe's the only one who's ever jerked off to a film strip before.
Yeah, well, strip, but that would be funny, though, you know?
Faster. Turn it faster, faster. No, slower. Slower.
Oh, I was about to come, and somebody put the slide in upside down.
Well, that could be interesting.
All right.
So, yeah, this is just... I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that their heart is in the right place. But this is just a lazy attempt. I guess this is easy for some parent. And what are they going to do? Are they going to haul these kids in if they work around? You were jerking with a fake ID. I mean, what are you going to do?
Really? This is kind of a ham-handed way of dealing with it. I mean, I'm talking about parents having those uncomfortable conversations with their kids about porn. Tell them what their expectations are for them. Tell them, like what Joe was saying, you know, if you're going to be, you know, watching this, I want you to understand a few things.
And Joe will explain it. Now, you see what she did there? That's very pleasurable.
and to Pip's point, she said the uncomfortable conversation. This is the comfortable conversation.
Yes. Pip recommends that you get your teenager into a room, you turn down the lights real low, maybe give them some Merlot, and then to have that conversation.
Make some cocoa and there's some s'mores, and you sit them down on the car, you know, to sit them down, and you tell them about double penetration.
Hey.
You know, and learn them some.
I am not having that conversation.
In the family room.
Well, according to Pip, that's where the computer is. The computer's in the family room. 1996 Helix over there.
I know.
Now, Billy, there's a thing called doggy style. I'm going to bend Mom over the couch, and I'm going to demonstrate. Yeah.
Hold on. I want to go back for a second, because you just said that you're going to talk about double penetration, and you said it was a wholesome family night.
Right.
It sure is.
What are the beads for, Dad? I'm going to run them up and down Mom's asshole. That is
great.
And I thought you got them in a trade with a Native American. Huh.
For all of that.
But, I mean, well, just to take this bigger, because now you have a senator from Utah who wants to make this a federal law. Once and for all, can we stop with the Republicans are for small government? They are not. They are for as big government as the Democrats are. They just pick what they want. And we're going to get to a big Democrat government thing in the next story. They just choose what they want. We don't have a small government party.
For pornography, there's going to be speakeasies with porno in there, you know? Who's at the door? Nah, see, I want to jerk off. See, let me in, see?
But think about it. Think about it. We used to get fake ID so we could go to the bars. Now you have to get a fake ID to do the stroke. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm having a vision of my future job. It's going to be the porn saloon matron. I'm going to be there with the squeezy bottle and wiping up cushions and oh my god.
Yeah, but I would think something there's somebody like that at a brothel. So yeah, I mean it's a job.
You're gonna get in a lot of sticky situations.
Joe. There you have it. Now Joe blew his load with that joke, didn't he, kids?
Yeah. Right. He just lubed that one in there.
All right.
Look at you, that one.
Thank you.
Let's now it's time for the Democrats. That was the Republicans controlling your life. Now it's the Democrats' turn.
Now we hear from their bullshit.
Yes. Both sides will be having a lot of bullshit tonight. Government Kathy Hochul. Hey, she's our governor. Quietly snuck. Shh. Nobody pay attention. A proposal to outlaw new gas stoves into New York housing compact. She unveiled during her State of the State speech Tuesday, urging people to ditch their kitchen's gas grills and go electric. Or move into an HOA where you can't have an outside gas grill. The ban would affect old-timers and millennials who are obsessed with cast iron pans, which are tricky to use on old electric stoves. This is plain stupid, says 70-year-old resident of Seagate, Brooklyn, who gave his name as Victor K. We lost electricity during Hurricane Sandy. The only thing we had to heat up our food was gas. What if that happens again? Hochul's plan would ban gas stoves, hot water heaters, and oil furnaces in both new home and commercial construction by the end of the decade. And now we're in Joe's territory. If gas stoves get banned, I want a house with a fire pit and cast iron cauldron, one Twitter user joked. Electric cooking is not the way. While the plan could be an annoyance for home cooks, restaurateur Stratus Morfogan said for professional chefs, it will tank it and bring growth to a halt and destroy our industry. This is just a total farce to appease the woke movement, Morphican fumed Wednesday. All right, first of all, this isn't woke. This isn't a woke. Stop using woke whenever you don't like something. This has nothing. Yes. This has nothing to do with being woke. You might not like it, which is fine.
Green New Deal. It's the Green New Deal policy.
The Green New Deal has nothing to do with woke. It has nothing. Woke is being sensitive to how other people might have been treated unjustly. That's what woke is. This has nothing to do with woke. Anyway, and of course it's the Post, so they put it in there and nobody corrects them. But that's okay. Electric can work for fast casual. However, with fine dining, it's impossible to function with an electric kitchen, said Morfogogan, director of operations for the Brooklyn Chop House and founder of Brooklyn Dumpling Shop Eateries. Imagine a guest ordering a 2 to 3 pound old fish. It usually takes 40 to 50 minutes to cook. Now it will take 2 hours. But look how long it took you to fish it. Can't wait to see the Yelp reviews if this happens, he added ruefully. Hochul's snuffing out of gas cookery was not made explicit in the speech, but came in a vague reference to ending the sale of any new fossil fuel-powered heating equipment by 2030. If that came to pass, the New York dining scene's goose would be cooked, as chefs would be unable to achieve the precise control they need to cook, said restaurateur James Malyos. I have never cooked at electric because it's never been able to do the same job, said Malyos, the managing partner of Civetta Hospitality. I've cooked with electric and outdoor markets like Urban Space, and it sucked. It takes forever, and people don't like the results. You can't char! You can't char! It doesn't work the same way. We'd eat the char. Andrew Ridgey, executive director of New York City Hospitality Alliance, which represents more than 24,000 eating and drinking establishments, also blasted Hochul's plan. Putting aside if chefs prefer cooking with gas or not, the cost to open up a new restaurant would skyrocket if someone had to convert existing gas equipment into electric, which could be further complicated by whether or not the building had an adequate electrical load. In addition to banning the sale of gas stoves, Hochul's plan would require all new construction to be the zero emissions starting in 2025 for small buildings and 2028 for large buildings. The governor's office confirmed Wednesday that the proposal, which Hochul couched in language about helping residents struggling with high electric bills, applied to residential, commercial, and mixed-use buildings with no exceptions. Governor Hochul has been clear that we have to take bold steps on climate to protect the health and safety of our children, and 30% of state greenhouse gas emissions come from buildings, because those buildings fart a lot. Her spokeswoman, Hazel Crampton Hayes, said, reiterating it would only apply to new construction. This proposal would not apply to existing gas stoves in existing buildings like these restaurants, and would mark the beginning of a process to determine appropriate regulations to best protect our planet, our health, and our economy. In December 2021, then-Mayor Bill de Blasio signed a bill to phase out the city's fossil fuel heaters, with all new buildings required to be fully electric starting in 2027. But the law specifically exempts commercial kitchens in addition to emergency and power backup generators. Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley accused Hochul and her fellow Democratic lawmakers of pushing a delusional environmental agenda that will come with harsh realities for the people of New York. She's taking the outrageous steps of eliminating gas stoves in new buildings and telling people how they can heat their homes. Natural gas has been a safe, reliable part of our energy portfolio for years. People need to wake up to the seriousness of New York's energy overhaul before it's too late, he warned. Hochul proposal came one day after before President Biden pushed back against controversial comments from Commissioner Richard Trumka Jr. of the U.S. Consumer Protection Product Safety Commission, who said new gas stoves could be banned nationwide due to studies that link them to respiratory problems and other illnesses. The president does not support banning gas stoves, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said on Wednesday. Here's the problem with it. While, yes, we need to eliminate gas house emissions, this does not seem like the best way to do it because we don't have the technology yet. Electric gas is not the technology. And the way to do it, don't ban it. Create incentives for builders and restaurateurs. That's how you do it. You go, listen, we're going to give you a tax credit or whatever. That's what they did with electric cars. That's what they do with solar panels in there. Incentivize it. Make me want to do it. But don't mandate it because then people are going to resent you. And the technology, it has to get better before you do it. I mean, I know when we were looking for this house, the wife absolutely did not want an electric stove. And you know what? That macaroni and cheese ain't going to cook on electric, kids. It needs gas, that mac and cheese.
I've got a gas stove, and if I got to replace the gas stove now, what do I got to do? I can't get a gas stove. I have to get an not only get an electric stove. I've got to get an electrician in to run $220 over that. I don't have that kind of money. People don't have that kind of money. You're spot on that the infrastructure can't support it yet, and they're talking a scant 4 years away. Because I am in the business, we've talked about not only with the gas stoves, but basically with them wanting to eliminate gas on new hookups as it is when they don't have another viable availability of energy for that. So they're being very have, and it's the same thing with electric cars going against cars from fossil fuel. Have the market dictate it into obsolescence, not mandate it.
I also don't understand with the where they're switching to electric. Is this electric powered by hydro? Is it powered by wind? Is it powered by solar? Now I realize these factories, plants are not going to give off the same amount of emissions as all these houses and whatnot. But it's not like that. How about you solve that problem first? How about you convert all the electric factories into renewable energy and make that the thing? Go, listen, we're going to convert. We're going to set aside this money in the budget to convert all this stuff before you start putting it on us. That would show me something.
And then they have to demonstrate that the grid is sustainable. With running the cars. So, and like I said, my thing with the electric cars is that basically it's the recharge time and the mileage you do get from them, which is getting, better year by year. Do I hate electric cars? No, I think it's a lot easier, dealing with an electric car than it is an internal combustion engine. However, the technology isn't there yet. And for my needs, as a traveling entertainer who's getting to the day program, it's not viable for me. And I don't want to be mandated that I have to get it until they can prove that it's viable for me and the infrastructure can handle it.
So I think what they're going to do, I think what's going to happen now is it's about, at some point in the next few years, if this goes through, like we're going to have to go to Jersey to buy our gas stoves. Am I reading this right? I mean, listen, the three of us live close enough to Jersey where we could do it. But there are people, right. There are people in parts of New York that live nowhere near another state. I don't know. Listen, I'm all for saving the planet. I think this goes back to what I said last week, where it seems like liberals, when they overstep, a lot of times their heart's in the right place. And a lot of times when the conservatives overstep, they're just being mean. I think Hochul's heart is in the right place, but it's overstepping and it's too much. You got to read the situation. We don't have the technology yet. Unfortunately, I wish an electric grill could perform as well as a gas grill. It just doesn't for whatever reason. And I hear why these restaurants are upset about it. They're fearing for their lives. I mean, for the three of us, for most home cooks, it's an inconvenience. I mean, my wife didn't want the inconvenience. She wanted to cook with gas. The reality is the three of our households could deal with an electric stove if we had to.
There's going to be a lot of companies. Like I said, one of the things that I sell are gas connectors. Gas connectors. Now, basically, you have the gas connector that you use for your boiler, your water heater. You use it on your dryer. There's also commercial-grade gas connectors that are sold for restaurants. We dabbled in it a little bit. It didn't take off on our end. However, there's a couple of companies, two of them, that's their bread and butter. And I can't see them sitting on their hands. They're probably going to lobby, because that's gonna screw them, because those gas connectors are a decent buck too, because you need the connector. There is an attachment that you hook onto the stove, and it's like a chain connector. This way, if you get a gas blowout, the chain catches it. So there's a whole to do with that, which is a whole industry.
Now,
I don't see those two manufacturers, those three manufacturers, sitting on their hands with that either. They're going to lobby. I was also listening to Anthony Weiner has a show on Saturdays, and I had the radio on, and he was, and you know how he leans and what he does in his off time, but nonetheless.
You know his hobbies. You know how he likes to spend his free time.
Probably, and we all know how he leans.
Yes.
He probably has something to say about the previous story. But basically what it was is that he was saying that, you know, that's not the case. She's not going to outlaw it. But, you know, and the Republicans have taken it way out of
hand. Well, hold on. Let me touch on that, because I think he's right. If I might be wrong, but I think the State of the States are kind of like similar to the presidential State of the Union addresses. A lot of it's aspirational. Like, this is what I would like to do. And most of the times they can't do it. So I think she's just throwing that out there. I don't.
She might have threw that out. You know, she was saying, you know, because he was saying, you know, it's just saying it, but then putting it in a bill. But we got to see where the bill. But I can guarantee, basically, there's going to be enough argument that the infrastructure can't handle it. Life is going to complain. The four manufacturers, two manufacturers that make the gas connectors complain. The stove manufacturers. You don't think Viking and those commercial stove makers are going to sit there and go, "Oh, okay."
Well, no, I don't think they will, because they'll adapt, and people will have to get new stoves, and they'll be fine. I'm not worried about the manufacturers. I'm worried, you know, for the average person. But listen, it's...
And also those restaurants that are going to have to convert, especially if you decide to remodel, or if they're, you know, have to get a replacement stove. Now they have to run 220, they have to do all that, and it's an added expense. And these, you know, restaurants, they live on the balls of their ass. I mean, a lot of them do well, but, you know, they work hard, and especially since the pandemic. I mean, the margins have been slim, and now they have to spend all this money on, you know, getting a gas stove. So it's going to be very interesting. I don't think it's going to fly. I think there's going to be enough outcry, but it just seems that, especially with this whole thing on electricity going to electric, the grid can't handle it. You haven't mastered the grid yet. The technology's not there.
Now, isn't the grid part of the infrastructure bill? Like, they are.
Yeah.
All right, so, like, I think that's part of the thing, you know, I think that's part of what Biden passed. You know, they got to improve the grid, which we've been saying for 50 years. I mean, this...
Yeah, but the thing about it is, with renewable can do only a certain amount, you know? So, and if they can perfect it further, mazel tov. But at this juncture, they're pushing all these mandates, or proposing these mandates, and at this juncture, at this time, the it's not perfected. And who knows if it'll be perfected in the short time.
But, you know, I will say this. If they put a deadline on it, it will make people speed up and not drag their feet. And then if they don't achieve the deadline, you can always push the deadline back. And nobody's going to do anything if you don't put these numbers out there. Listen, I give her credit. It's a problem. It's a problem. If she's just putting it out there to light a fire under people's ass, that's cool. But you got to do, like I said, you got to do other things before you just leave it up to the homeowner, the restaurateur, and the builder to shoulder the whole financial burden. You got to help them out.
Because we've had this conversation at the day program. I mean, I sell gas connectors. We sell all the gas meters, the meter bars, and all the gas fixtures for Con Ed. We sell all of that. So, you know, I mean, that's a lot of our livelihood, and a lot, you know, and we've been talking how they've been mandating this stuff, where they want to propose, and I think they're doing it already, that if you want to get a new gas hookup in New York, it's nearly next to impossible. But meanwhile, you got to get electric, or, you know, even fossil fuel, which they're trying to burn out. You go to electric, well, that's another thing on the infrastructure. They're saying, well, what if it really gets, you know, tough? Well, they're going to have rolling blackouts. So they're doing all this stuff that's needless. The infrastructure can't handle it.
You know what Hochul could do, which would really help the energy...
Well, fuck herself.
what she could do that would really help the energy situation in the state of New York, and this is a little bit in the weeds, but in solar, like other states, if you have solar panels, you generate all that solar energy, you can like store that and use that. In New York State, you can't do that. So it really decreases the benefit of New York State residents for getting solar panels. You don't really see the savings, and you're also relying on the individual company if there's an issue with the solar panels to come back on their sweet time.
Well, it also depends. Like that spare energy that you're saving, you need that for literally a rainy day.
Right. No, but what I'm saying is you don't get it. You don't get to keep it. You can't like store it on your property and go, you know what? I don't want to pay today. I'm just going to go on my reserves. You don't get it. Where other states, you can. So she really wants to improve the energy situation in New York. How about tackling that? And I think that, listen, you're going to have lobbyists from the power companies, but I think that's something you could get bipartisan support on, because I think most citizens would go, yeah, why can't we be like whatever state? Because I know in other states you can't do that.
Well, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and like we've been discussing, look, if you're a lobbyist for the power company, yeah, a lobbyist for the gas connector people and whatever, I get it. However, if you're somebody that's looking at the practicality of the infrastructure at this juncture, and where it's going, if they can perfect it in the time frame that they have and show results, you know, at that juncture, we'll take those steps. When you can demonstrate that it's here, it can be done, here is that, then you start making that transition where the obsolescence, the obsolescence is mandating it instead of the, like when everybody says, well, we're always going to ride a horse. Well, it got to the point where riding a horse was stupid. You know, we need a gas-powered vehicle. It needs to be like that, where it just got,
You know where she could do. You know where she could do this she could do this in new residential buildings, where it has to be on an individual basis, where existing grid can handle it. You go, all right, if your grid can handle X amount of new homes in this area with electric, then fine. That's what we're building there, because it can handle it and it has to be electric. That's fine. And then as the grid gets better and stronger, then you could keep on expanding it and rolling it out. You just can't arbitrarily pick a day.
Now, and the thing about it, the thing with that being said, I've been watching New York One, and New York One has been having shows on the sanitation system, the steam system, the fire department.
I'll tell you what, Joe. It is a party at that Curry household, between bags of recyclables and watch cuddling up with a nice program about steam. What a party it is over there.
What do you think? Yeah, I know. I know. And I've been watching these shows like a savant. And basically, you know, they do have key things in place. But the bottom line is with that, the infrastructure isn't there yet. They're making strides with it, but it's not there yet. I learned that a lot of New York City runs on steam power. And to generate that steam power has been gas and oil, not really that much of electric.
All right.
But a waste of this, so, you know. They're working on it. They're making interesting strides, but we're not there yet. And you know what? I can't. For me to sit there, well, we're never going to be that way. No. Technology is an interesting thing that like I said, when I was in college, 30 years ago, I proposed for a marketing class making a device that you talk into when it types, and it was told that it was far fetched. Well, it's a fucking reality. I'm looking at it right now. So I can't sit there. Oh, yeah, we'll never have it perfected, but we will. Not at this juncture, and don't push legislation that you can't have a grid to support it.
Scam Busters! All right. Gotta let it play all the way to Scam Busters that time. Good job. So this is a new scam coming. Fraudsters have scammed dozens of new Army soldiers out of more than $140,000 in a payroll scheme that tricks service members into sending cash through digital payment apps, like Venmo, military officials said. Multiple Army installations and the Service Academy at West Point warned troops about the scam targeting initial entry soldiers at multiple duty stations throughout the Army, U.S. Army, Fort Huachuca, Arizona said in a Facebook post. The caller identifies themselves as a non-commissioned officer or first sergeant with the Defense Finance and Accounting Service or the local finance office and requests a payment through peer-to-peer money transfer app to rectify a military pay problem. Fort Huachuca military police say the scam has so far claimed more than 74 victims and cost soldiers more than $143,000. According to a fact sheet attached to the post, the scammers request soldiers take care of the apparent pay issues using apps such as Zelle, Cash App, Venmo, Apple Pay, or PayPal, something the post warns the military would never do. I will say this. My scammers increasingly would like to get paid via Zelle. They never ask for Western Union or MoneyGram anymore. They seem to
Western Union stole yesterday.
It is. The defense for Western Union's the horse and buggy of scammer payment.
Right. And that's
when I was sitting.
Obsolescence has gotten less viable way to go.
I've been sitting on my family computer in the living room and trying to make a Western Union payments, and I'm having trouble.
The defense
The
Defense Finance and Accounting Service, DFAS, or your local military pay office will never ask or require soldier to pay debt or receive back pay through any peer-to-peer money transfer applications. If you have received a similar call or have been a victim of this scam, please contact your local military, police, or civilian law enforcement agency. Police say the scam appears to be targeting new soldiers, according to a post from Fort Benning, Georgia, which hosts basic training. The unknown person appears to be targeting initial entry soldiers who are in basic combat training, advanced individual training, or those who have newly arrived at the first duty station, a Fort Benning Facebook post said on Wednesday. Victims have been identified throughout the Army among all components and within other uniformed services. The widespread nature of the scam also prompted West Point, the Army Service Academy, to post a warning to cadets Monday stating, to date, no West Point personnel have been affected, but we want to make everyone aware of the methods being used to target and take advantage of soldiers. The Army's Criminal Investigation Division did not immediately reply to Fox News Digital request for comments. So there you have it. New scam. They get the noobs.
Yeah.
This is really a shame that, you know, they, it seems like the Army, or the military rather, and all the branches should make a better make a better program to explain to the newer members the dangers of the various scams, and, you know, sort of like the way you know, the IRS says, we will never call you. If anybody contacts you on the phone, it's a scam.
Yeah, but Pip, you're dealing with, like, young kids who just joined the military who think they're indestructible. You can tell them. They're not going to listen.
No, well, I mean, no, if you say, we will not call you on the phone and tell you
And they're probably loading their ID into the website so they can look at porn when you're talking at them. Yes, it should be they should be told, but I can't say that they're not being told, because they're kids. They don't want to listen.
Yeah, but when you're in boot camp, you're supposed to listen, and the drill sergeant gets in your ass.
Yeah, and you're not supposed to post where you are on Facebook or Instagram. You're not supposed to do a lot of things, and they do them anyway.
Yeah,
well, how about, the drill sergeant, are we going to call you and ask you for payback? No, drill sergeant! I mean, there are a lot of things that they learn. There are a lot of things that they learn to save their lives if they, you know, are being trained to do all sorts of combat maneuvers and how to strip their gun down, you know, and whatever, in how many seconds. They should also be taught just basics of military life. Like, we're not going to call you on the phone and ask you for money back.
Right, so you would figure that, you know, the sergeant would go up there and say, they will call you, they are not real. You know, yeah, give them a, you know, and tell them what's going on. And I mean, they don't beat around the bush in the Army. They tell you straight out. You know, and you want to know something? If they tell you that and you do it, well, you're stupid. You deserve to get scammed. There's also a new scam out. I don't know if you guys noticed on your text. I've been getting texts telling me that my shipment is ready to go, it's in transit, go here and do that. Now, I immediately get rid of it because basically I placed a small order for a couple of things on my FSA, from pharmacy, and basically they send you a confirmation, everything's legit. This is not legit. Now, for me, I don't order a lot of stuff online. I order nothing, and if I do, it's one or two things. I know exactly when it is. But, you know, I was talking to Joe's girl about it. For somebody like her that orders a bunch of stuff all the time, you might lose track and go, oh, yeah, maybe that is what I – and you go on there, and, you know, it's an absolute scam. And it's something that's been just happening, I would say, in the past 3 to 4 months. I've been starting to get these texts.
Yes. I started getting them in November, I would say, right before like Christmas shopping.
Yes.
And
correct.
It would say things about my shipment. But having done this show, of course, I looked at it carefully, and you have to look at the email return address. It has nothing to do with any shipment company that I know of.
Right.
It didn't have any actual tracking information or something I could tie back to something that I shopped for like Christmas shopping or whatever. So I just delete all of those. But I can see people who shop a lot just saying, oh God, that's, you know, I have to get that package for Billy's birthday, and, you know, clicking on it.
Yeah, they order something and they think it's that, and then they go on there and they get scammed.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
All right, let's do some turbulent air.
Oh boy.
This is your captain speaking. If you look to your right, you'll see a beautiful serene river. If you look to your left, majestic mountains. Uh-oh, straight ahead, it seems like we have a big black cloud. We're going to need you to fasten your seatbelts, folks, because it looks like we're in for a turbulent flight.
The story tonight is a story that has outraged many across the country. A man, a drunk man, urinated on a woman co-passenger in the business class of an Air India flight in November last year, and then left that flight without facing any action from the crew. He's now been banned from 30 days by the airline. The story, which was first reported by the Times of India today, caused a huge backlash, and Air India today issued a statement saying that it's also filed a police complaint and recommended that the unruly flyer be placed on a no-fly list. The aviation watchdog, the Directorate General of Civil Aviation, has also sought a report from the airline, and the incident, of course, only coming to light after the woman wrote to the chairman of the Air India Group. My colleague Vishnu Shom now joins us for more on this. Vishnu, this sounds like an absolutely awful nightmare. What more do we know?
It's absolutely horrific. It happened in 2018, same flight, same sector, by the way. Again, a passenger urinated on their co-passenger or an Air India flight. But let's talk about what happened on this time. Well, Air India has now placed a business class passenger on this flight from New York to Delhi on a 30-day no-fly list after he urinated on a co-passenger in business class on the flight. The DGCA is looking into the incident, which came to light after, as we mentioned, a letter was written to the Tata chairperson, N. Chandrasekaran. That ban could get now much longer because the government is looking at it. 30 days is the limit which the airline can restrict a passenger. So, on the 26th of November, a passenger unzipped and urinated on a co-passenger who was a senior citizen. She complained to the crew, who made her sit elsewhere, but no action was taken against the passenger, who was apparently drunk when the flight arrived in Delhi. There were no arrests. That senior citizen wrote to the chairperson of the Tata Group the following day. An FIR has now been filed against the offending passenger. The airline has put him on a 30-day no-fly list, and they forwarded his case to the Director General of Civil Aviation. The DGCA itself has also sought a report from Air India after this report. Significantly, in a statement, Air India has admitted that there were internal lapses in how this situation was handled. They say, we've also constituted an internal lapses committee to probe the part of Air India's crew and address the deficiencies that delayed quick redressal of the situation. We're also in regular contact with the aggrieved passenger. Now, Air India is trying to sort out that situation, but what we can tell you is this is, in fact, the latest incident in which the conduct of Indian passengers has come into sharp focus. Remember, on the 26th of December, a group of passengers beat up a co-passenger on a Bangkok to Kolkata flight on Thai Smile after he refused to make his seat upright before takeoff. On the 16th of December, video emerged of a heated altercation between a stewardess and a passenger on an IndiGo flight where she's heard telling the passenger, "I'm not your servant." Just Google and you'll find many more such examples.
Well, the ugly Indian passenger, Vishnu, thanks very much for joining us.
The woman complained to the crew and told them her clothes, shoes, and bag were soaked in urine. The crew allegedly gave her a set of pajamas and slippers and told her to return to her seat. Take your pissing, woman, claiming no other seat was available. I'm writing to express my deep disappointment regarding the appalling incident that occurred during my business class trip on flight AI-102 commencing New York JFK on November 26th. Anyway. Yeah, always come from JFK. By the way, just a brief aside, Joe had a conniption fit over not being able to get his extra $16 for recyclables. Could you imagine the letter Joe would write if somebody urinated on him?
I'm pissed off.
This has been the most...
Why in your airline, you double charge me for bags and I have to sit like a wee-wee pad on the whole fucking flight? Why, I have to potty train some drunken asshole? And all you bring is a bag of potato chips? I will never fly your airline again, and if I do, I will be wearing a rain jacket.
It's my bad. I should have worn a slicker.
Yeah, a slicker.
This has been the most traumatic.
Racist. I said slicker.
Jeez, wow, okay. This has been the most traumatic flight that I've ever experienced. I would think so. During the course of the flight, shortly after lunch was served and the lights were switched off, I was getting ready to sleep, and another passenger walked to my seat, completely inebriated. He unzipped his pants, relieved himself, and continued to expose to me his private parts. Look at it! Look what it did! Look at my wiener!
It's unbelievable!
Now, the guy was considering, he still kept on exposing himself. You know what? I'd be more concerned of trying to get the piss off my clothes than, you know, stupid.
He did not respond immediately, but after a few minutes, left the area, she said in the letter. The woman reportedly wrote that she didn't want to sit on the soiled seat, so she was given a crew seat. After an hour, she was allegedly told by the crew to return to her seat, which was covered with sheets but still reeking of urine. When she firmly refused to take the same seat, she was given another crew seat, where she spent the remaining 5 hours of the flight. I subsequently learned from a fellow passenger that several seats were available in first class, and he suggested to the crew that I be moved into one of those rather than being forced to sit in a soiled seat. Clearly, the crew did not feel that taking care of a distressed passenger was a priority. At the end of the flight, the staff told me they would get me a wheelchair to ensure that clear customs as early as possible. However, the wheelchair deposited me at a waiting area where I waited for 30 minutes and nobody came to get me. I finally had to clear customs on my own and collected the luggage by myself in Air India pajamas and socks, the woman said, squishing along, calling the Air India crew deeply unprofessional. Air India had expressed strong condemnation and apologized promptly after an identical incident in August 2018 when a drunk man urinated on the seat and a woman passenger on the New York to Delhi flight. Because apparently this is a thing.
Yeah. Same guy.
Same guy.
Put a bathroom on a plane.
All right. So here's my... First of all, can we all agree this is the worst flight experience ever? Sans crashing, outside of a crash?
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, I actually think there's some other bodily fluids that could be flung my way that I would be a lot more upset about. But marginally, this is very, very, very bad.
I didn't realize you had a list of bodily fluids, dear, that you find objectionable on a flight.
Blood, piss, cum, yeah.
There's lots of things that are objectionable.
Here's my radical idea. We need to take... No, it's a good idea. We need to take out a row or two of seats in the back of the plane, and they need to have, like, a jail for unruly passengers. That's what we are at this as human beings, because we can't be trusted to fly anymore without making a spectacle. They have them at stadiums. That Philadelphia is known, you know, where the Eagles play. They're known for having a jail. We need this on a plane. Come here with your wiener. Boom, you go in there. How do they? And there's seats in first class. How are you not giving her the? Well, to be fair, To be fair, she does smell like piss, and those people paid a lot of money.
Right, you know, the first class passengers want everything just so. What I would do is I would have there's a pressurized door, and the door is a trap door that leads out to the bottom of the plane. So if you act like that, like I would take Mr. Piss guy, and I would bring him to that thing. I'd strap a parachute on him and go, all right, we'll see you. Oh, we're over the ocean. Well, you know, you left enough water in here. Maybe you can pee in the ocean. Nobody gives a shit there. Maybe except a fucking shark. And out you go. And, you know.
Listen, if you can put pets in the luggage compartment, why can't you put the wild-ass drunks and peers and God knows what elsers in that spot? If you could put a dog in a cage there, why can't you lock those people up there? It's like a flying hockey game. They need a penalty box. I totally agree with Devin.
I mean, you forget to close the overhead door to put your travel bag in, the lady yells at you, and you almost get thrown off the fucking plane, you know?
Right. It's unbelievable that this happened. I would be screaming like a B-movie horror actress if somebody came near me unzipped for any reason. But then the peeing, he's going to lose that implement. He's losing it.
I like the fact that this woman just sat there for the pissing. I got to tell you, as soon as I see Pissy Patel's penis, well, there's going to be issues. I'm not sticking around to see the second act of the show.
Yeah. Did he think he was like one of the flight attendants? Coffee, pee, me? You know, come on.
Coffee, pillow, nuts.
It's unbelievable. And then the fact that they did not grab this guy before he left the plane to have him arrested. What the fuck?
Well, because apparently this is a thing.
I think in the Indian culture, I think women are shunned upon or don't have, you know, they're like looked down on. So maybe they felt that, you know, she had it coming to her.
Yes. Yes, she had it coming. She bought business class. What's the matter, bitch? Can't afford first class? Too good for coach? Business class is where we do our peeing.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's a cultural norm. You know, we pee on our women and they take it. No,
yeah, no. I think Joe's right. I think it's a love of cows and golden showers. I think Joe's correct.
No, I do not think that that's the issue. But I can understand being in a situation that is so far beyond the norm that you're in shock and you don't take action right away because you can't believe what you're experiencing. Like, you just absolutely cannot believe it.
Is this guy pissing on me? I'm on a plane. This guy's pissing on me?
It's like, is this real? Like, is somebody going to come over and save me? Like, really? You know, you like, I can imagine that for a moment. Not for a whole steady stream worth. A moment.
Maybe she's like, you know what? I'd like to marinate in urine.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure that was not her thought.
I'm gonna get some Air India pajamas out of this thing. I'm going to sit.
That's what she really wanted. She was really hoping to sit in the jump seat.
They put her in a wheelchair, wheel around, and she's sitting like a toddler by baggage claim in fucking pajamas. Yeah, it is a major lawsuit. I want a 757 out of this.
I don't understand.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand. Like, in my mind, like, when that happens, you're landing the plane at the first place possible. I'm sorry, we have to stop the flight, and this guy has to be arrested, and it sucks for everybody else. But that's what has to happen. You can't have a roving air pisser just on the plane willy nilly. You can't do that.
Yeah.
No, it's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, it's sort of like those people who are stuck on a plane with somebody who's like rummaging amongst themselves and their parts under a blanket. You don't want to sit next to that. But if somebody got it on me, I would lose my fucking mind.
Now, I'm going to look, perhaps, because it's not the first time this has happened from New York, maybe Air India is just trying to recreate that New York subway experience. Maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but you don't get pissed on in the subway. You just got to smell it.
Well, no, I feel like people have been pissed on in the subway. I feel like that's happened.
You have a rat run up the aisle, too?
Maybe they do.
Yeah. For the full experience, sure. And there has to be a panhandler.
Speaking of planes, that plane that unfortunately crashed yesterday, he had this guy was videotaping the plane landing, and it was fucked up. I mean, everybody's on the plane, looks normal, and all of a sudden the things start going blurry and stuff like that.
Wait, is this the one in Nepal?
Yeah.
I didn't see that. I just saw the plane flying, and then it like took a sharp left. That's what I saw.
Yeah, but they actually have video. Somehow, some guy was video. Everybody died. I guess they recovered a phone. But they show the guy on the plane videotaping the landing, and then everything goes haywire. And the next thing you start to see is like fire and stuff like that. It's fucked up.
Oh God.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's terrible. See, that's worse than getting peed on.
I said sans crash. I said.
I know.
I understand. I know the boundaries you put on the story. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I'll tell you what, I would rather get jizzed on than peed on.
What? Seriously?
Because, first of all, there's not going to be as much. Second of all, it's not going to soak you. I mean, you're going to scrub it out, but you're not going to need shoes and socks and pajamas. You're not going to need all that. To be honest, you're going to see it coming before it comes a lot quicker. It's going to take a lot more effort to get that out.
Hey, you're going to see it coming.
Gavin, when we met, there was, I don't know if I might have been early enough if I was still doing the joke. Adam stole it from me, but it was a joke about reading a plane crashing, and then there were some passengers that transferred onto another flight. And I'd be like, hello, Greg, who was this lunatic hopping out of the fuselage? God damn it, you people will pay. Right, grab my smoldering luggage. I need a transfer, you know?
I'm not getting on another plane after that. No, no,
no,
sir.
I wonder how many miles Air India is going to give her for this. Like,
oh my God!
Like, do you get 70,000 Air India miles for getting pissed on? Like, do you get to go to the Admiral's Club if you've been urinated on one of their flights? I feel like you have to get something. Do you get like a credit card with no an Air India credit card with no annual fee? No, wave the face. She's the urine lady. I feel like there's got to be something.
I want free flights for life. You bastards! Absolutely.
You know, and it's like a situation like that. It's like, what are they going to do next? Pee on it? No, they already did that. That was pretty much step one.
Step one was number one.
I wish the lady at Stop and Shop who had a deal with Joe at customer service goes, stop your bitch, and at least you weren't pissed on.
Wait, are these my only choices?
Joe would have been upset. Listen, if there would have been a sign that says you might get pissed on and I didn't see it, shame on me. But put up a sign.
At least I know that I have to bring a piece of plastic on my carry-on bag and
sure.
Up with it before we take off. Yeah.
Sure, you have to take an Air India flight like you're going to a Gallagher concert.
Exactly.
Caution, urine may fall.
You know, I just heard because of the story, Air India no longer calls it business class. They call it the splash zone. So.
Yeah. That's terrible.
I just
first few rows of a Gallagher show.
I just like the fact that, and this isn't the first time it happened on this flight. What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We try to make it a homey experience. We actually call that area the urine pad.
I'm not ready to go home to India yet. That's all right. The plane smells like piss just like the city. So you can ease into your trip back home.
would you like a snack? Well, what do you got? We have some Doritos. We have pretzels and urine cakes. Would you like
your... urine cakes! Oh God, that's terrible.
I mean, they just let this guy wander back to his seat. Honestly, here's what they should have done. What they should have corralled this guy and go, no, you sit in your mess like you did with a doggy or a kitty. You sit in your mess and you let the woman go back to his seat. That's what you do.
Yeah,
it's really unbelievable.
I think
in that culture, I think women are looked down on.
Not that much, Joe. You can't go pissing on them willy-nilly.
No. Wait, and I don't remember how old this woman was. Wasn't she an older lady?
She's in her 70s.
Yeah, that's... No. You know, grandmas in any culture are not to be pissed on. No. No. No, Joe, down.
Joe's trying to justify good urination.
Grandma just got pissed on by an Indian flying over the Atlantic Ocean.
I just picture this guy swashbuckling down the aisle, stopping by her. She looks like she could take a good pissing.
Oh, jeez.
Errol Flynn's got to take a leak.
What a ridiculous story. Anyway, all right.
Terrible.
Glad we could share it with the people.
Where'd you go?
You know what? I disconnected by, there's this little pot that I put under my foot to, like, put my foot up on to, like, help my back.
Pot, maybe to piss, you know, or you could just put an Indian woman under there. All right, I gotcha.
And it pushed into my, the plug. So I gotta get back on.
And you were gone.
No. Oops.
All right, let's take our final break. We'll come back with some scamming scammers. On the break, we have new music from Betty Boom, Deraid, and Masquerade with Hit the Road, Jack. It's a club remake. Lauren Mayhew, Fresh Tracks, and O'Neill with Let's Talk About You. And you can learn more about those artists at khb-.